So people are just staying at home and they are more afraid.
Malaysia COVID cases rise again. It's Monday, October 12th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson. You'll find us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, North Korea shows off big missiles, a debate about future debates, cultivating farmers' votes, young people hope to change the climate, Pakistani women on two wheels. It's all on today's VOA Asia. For several months, it looked like Malaysia had managed to contain the spread of COVID-19. But a recent surge in cases has many Malaysians worried. As Dave Grunebaum reports, the rising health concerns are taking an increasing toll on local businesses.
Hi, welcome. Hi, welcome to lunch.
Alex Chong hopes to pick up some customers for his restaurant. But this shopping mall is very light on foot traffic at a time of day when it's typically busy.
I'm totally blank. I don't know what to do.
Chong's company owns 9 restaurants, including this one called Lele. After several rough months at the beginning of the coronavirus pandemic, business began to bounce back in August and September. But this month, Chong's restaurants have seen a dramatic drop in customers once again.
So people are just staying at home, and they are more afraid.
The reason? Significant increases in the number of confirmed cases of COVID-19 in Malaysia. The country had record high numbers of new cases several days last week. Hakimi Azri enjoyed lunch out with a few friends, but he says occasions like this are becoming rare for him because the rising count of cases has convinced him to spend more time at home.
So I only just go to work and then just go back direct, immediately go back to the house. I can see even for my colleague and my friends, I can see they are doing like that.
Chong says business at his restaurants is down more than 50% compared to just a few weeks ago. He says if this continues for a few more weeks, he might have to close down 2 of his restaurants and lay off about 20 employees.
We'll have to shut down those locations whereby our landlords don't give us rebates. Our landlords don't help us, with the rentals.
Lim Brothers Fruits has been serving this Kuala Lumpur neighborhood for 45 years. They're known for their fresh-made spicy fruit salad. But they say business has dropped almost 40% in just the past week. They say they're now barely breaking even and cannot handle any more strain on the bottom line.
Much more fear, concern about the businesses will be affect on the rental of this shop and the salary of our staff.
Welcome.
Just as some local businesses were thinking the worst might be behind them, this resurging health crisis is showing the economy is continuing to struggle. Dave Grunebaum for VOA News, Kuala Lumpur.
You can follow more on this and all of our other stories by following us on Twitter at VOA Asia. We're also on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. And, of course, you can visit the voanews.com website. These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. Pakistan blocks TikTok, citing immoral content. Top Pakistani Sunni Muslim cleric assassinated. Activists say Cambodia's draft cybercrime law imperils free expression and privacy. Pandemic worsens challenges faced by girls globally. Chinese 5G not living up to its hype. Expanded coverage of all these stories and much more are on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also stop by our website, that's voanews.com. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson. North Korea has unveiled what defense analysts say appears to be a new intercontinental ballistic missile. The ICBM was displayed during a carefully choreographed military parade that was held despite concerns about the coronavirus pandemic. VOA's Bill Gallo tells us more from Seoul.
If North Korean leader Kim Jong-un is worried about the coronavirus, it wasn't evident Saturday. The North Korean leader oversaw a massive military parade with no attendees seen social distancing or wearing masks. An emotional Kim apologized for recent economic troubles, but insisted not a single North Korean had fallen victim to COVID-19.
Above all, I feel very grateful for all our people being healthy and sound.
Afterwards, North Korea unveiled what some analysts described as a monster new intercontinental ballistic missile. It's perhaps the world's largest road mobile ICBM, says analyst Bruce Klingner.
It gives North Korea more capability, most likely for payload. They already have the Hwasong-15, which can range all of the continental United States. So having a larger missile would enable it perhaps to have multiple warheads or what's known as penetration aids, ways of deceiving anti-ballistic missile defenses.
The ICBM may be the new strategic weapon, Kim promised at the beginning of the year. But Kim may be reluctant to test it before the upcoming U.S. presidential election.
What I would expect is to see that ICBM tested next year. What North Korea tends to do is something very provocative in the first year of a new U.S. or South Korean administration. So regardless of who the U.S. president is next year, I'd expect to see this new ICBM tested.
U.S. President Donald Trump has warned Kim against any major provocations near the November 3rd U.S. election. Bill Gallo, VOA News, Seoul.
China is showing no sign of easing its military intimidation against Taiwan. After reportedly flying a military transport aircraft near the airspace of the island last week, which it views as a renegade province, reports say the plane flew over Taiwan's Air Defense Identification Zone, or ADIZ, but it did not cross the so-called Taiwan Strait median line separating China from the self-ruling island. There has been no comment from Taiwan defense officials on the reported incursion. With China now denying the existence of the median line, some argue that for the sake of deterrence, Taiwan should consider following suit. Others believe such a reciprocal response will do Taiwan no good and fuel further tension. Oh Yi-sun is a senior fellow with Singapore Institute of International Affairs.
This is sort of a brinksmanship at play here. Ultimately, it depends on how resolved both sides are in terms of their claim of sovereignty and as well as their counterclaim for not having such sovereignty.
In the face of China's military provocation, recent polls showed that a record 86% of people in Taiwan identified themselves as Taiwanese instead of Chinese. Happening now in Asia, the coronavirus pandemic has prompted Australia to cut its annual acceptance of refugees by 30% effective immediately. Official documents suggest the cuts to the humanitarian program will save almost $700 million. The Refugee Council of Australia called the announcement shattering. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad you're with us today as we all begin a brand new week together on VOA Asia. President Donald Trump says he will not participate in a virtual debate, and that's leaving the status of the rest of the debates in limbo. VOA's Steve Reddish brings us up to date.
Could the vice presidential debate have been the final debate of 2020? Mitchell McKinney is director of the Political Communication Institute at the University of Missouri.
I think there will be another debate.
Halfway through the four scheduled debates, the quadrennial campaign ritual is on hold. After President Donald Trump's COVID diagnosis, the Commission on Presidential Debates announced the next presidential debate on Thursday, October 15th, planned as a town hall event with undecided voters asking their questions, would be held virtually for pandemic safety reasons. Again, Mitchell McKinney.
If we could go forward with a virtual town hall, I think it would be so symbolic, emblematic of what the nation is doing.
President Trump told Fox Business News he was not going to waste his time on a virtual debate, calling it ridiculous. Karin Vasby Anderson is a professor of communication studies at Colorado State University.
If it's on Zoom and his mic is cut, then he can raise his voice and keep speaking as much as possible, but it is technologically possible to silence him. And in any face-to-face context, you could cut his mic. But if he's speaking up, it's going to be picked up by Biden's mic.
The announcement of a virtual debate and President Trump's dismissal of it came less than 12 hours after Vice President Mike Pence and Senator Kamala Harris met in the year's only vice presidential debate. Again, Karen Vaspy Anderson.
So did Pence kind of bolster Trump's appeal and what Trump has been saying about these various issues? And did Harris project a consistent message, a message that was consistent with Biden? Yes, they both absolutely did that.
Here again, Mitchell McKinney from the University of Missouri.
You know, there were two starkly different narratives developed by these two candidates. One is, boy, these 4 years have been, you know, wonderful under the leadership of Donald Trump. And if not for Donald Trump, it would just be much worse. And all of the great things, even on the coronavirus and then, of course, you know, her prosecuting the record of at one point, what did she say on the coronavirus? This is the worst debacle in the history of the presidency and doesn't deserve four more years. So we had those two contrasting images of narratives.
Analysts saw a recurring theme from the debate performances of Trump and Pence, ignoring the moderator and breaking rules. Here again, Karen Vaspy Anderson from Colorado State University.
As we got into the debate, he made it clear that he thought that it was his role to decide how long he spoke, when he spoke, what he spoke about. So he wrested authority that had been rooted in the moderator, who, you know, happened to be a woman moderating this debate. And in fact, as the debate went on, he took the initiative to try to get Senator Harris to answer his questions, questions that had not been posed by the moderator. So he made it very clear that he thought that it was his role to be the authoritative presence in that debate.
I do think that maybe Mike Pence took advantage in a way of, okay, you know, I'm winning this battle. I'm ignoring the rules. I'm breaking the rules.
I did not create the rules for tonight.
She's kind of pleaded with me. I'm just going to continue doing it. And then she sort of, after a while, just sort of gave it up.
The scheduled town hall debate on October 15th will not take place. Former Vice President Joe Biden has already scheduled a televised event that night, taking questions from voters. President Trump has indicated he wants to hold a live event that evening as well. The final presidential debate is scheduled for October 22nd in Nashville, Tennessee. The Trump campaign is pressing for another debate on October 29th. Steve Reddish, VOA News, Washington.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook and say hello online or on your smartphone. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, and read and share all of the latest from VOA Asia anytime. VOA Asia is your trusted source for news and great features.
This news from VOA Asia. After U.S. President Donald Trump tweeted that all U.S. forces should return home from Afghanistan before the end of the year, defense officials in charge of executing that withdrawal have remained silent. Military experts are raising concerns about the ramifications of such a move. You'll find all the big stories throughout the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. While U.S. President Donald Trump has slipped in recent national polls, he retains core backing in much of America's farm country, where new trade pacts and massive government assistance for the agriculture sector are popular. As VOA's Kane Faribault reports, along with the coronavirus pandemic, aid and trade are on the minds of many farmers as they prepare to vote in the November 3rd contest between Trump and Democratic challenger Joe Biden.
Earlier this year, Ron Moore was preparing for another year of trade uncertainty with China, one of the largest purchasers of the soybeans he grows on his rural Illinois farm. But what he didn't see coming was a global coronavirus pandemic that rattled the food supply chain, pushing down wholesale prices for livestock and the foodstuffs they consume.
That decimated the demand for the grains that provide the feed for the livestock.
The U.S. Department of Agriculture reports amid the trade war, soybean prices fell 35% between 2014 and 2019, even before the pandemic reduced Chinese purchases further.
It was a double whammy, so to speak.
Prices for corn, one of the key crops on Wendell Schauman's farm, fell 44% between 2014 and 2019. He hasn't seen a significant rebound.
It's been a pretty ugly year price-wise. Most of what I sold was way below what I'd hoped for.
Which is why both Moore and Schauman say the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Market Facilitation Program payments to farmers since 2018 kept them afloat as the Trump administration negotiated new trade deals.
But it was certainly a big help. I'm sure there are people that wouldn't have had anything to eat if it didn't happen.
It gives us a lifeline. We're still trading water. We need more profitability, better markets for us to get out of the water and get up on dry land.
The USDA unveiled a $19 billion aid package earlier this year as the pandemic constricted the nation's food supply. Another round of $14 billion in agricultural assistance followed in September. Illinois Farm Bureau's National Legislative Director Adam Nielsen says government spending totaling nearly $100 billion since 2016 had a positive impact.
We've been able to stem the tide of farm bankruptcies. Farmers, while they haven't been spending extravagantly, have been able to pay for feed, seed, and fertilizer to get another crop in the ground.
While Wendell Schauman says government aid on that scale can't continue forever.
There's not enough money for the government to just keep giving everybody a living. That just doesn't work.
He nevertheless credits President Trump for progress on trade issues and hopes America forges a permanent agreement with China.
I like what he's done. I don't like the way he talks sometimes. I get frustrated with that. You could have some better manners.
Hey, man.
Which is why Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden's message of bipartisan cooperation also resonates with Schauman.
You've got to have compromise. You've got to have people working together.
What Schauman doesn't like are what he perceives as demands to completely overhaul the U.S. economy to combat climate change.
I haven't heard anybody talking about a battery-driven tractor yet. What am I going to plant with? The talk just seems nonsensical to me.
A late September poll of rural Americans showed President Trump with a 17-point lead over Biden. In the same poll, 59% of farmers said they would be struggling financially without the USDA's Market Facilitation Program and the Coronavirus Food Assistance Program.
Regardless of some of the outcomes or how people want to look at it, I think President Trump has, you know, focused attention on rural America, where maybe that hasn't been the case in quite a few years.
Trump's popularity in rural areas endures at a time when the president's national poll numbers have dipped. While many Illinois farmers voice support for Trump, the most recent statewide poll, including America's third largest city, Chicago, gives Biden a commanding 25-point lead, 61% to 36%. Kane Fairbaugh, VOA News, Roseville, Illinois.
Coronavirus questions. Can the virus be spread by mosquito bites? Is there a vaccine or medication that prevents it? Is there any medicine that cures it? The answer to all of the questions is no. The best steps to take: wash your hands, cover your cough, stay at home if you are sick or advised to by local authorities.
Now on VOA Asia, this election season, young American voters are raising their voices and demanding action to fight climate change. VOA's Veronica Valderas-Iglesias looks at how young people, Democrats and Republicans, are urging communication and compromise to tackle what most climate scientists call a global existential threat.
We're taking an electric car around the entire United States to showcase market-based, innovative ways to solve climate change.
22-year-old Benji Backer, a Republican, says conservative values can solve climate change.
There needs to be kind of this transformation of environmentalism from being the token Democrat issue to being an issue that both sides have a stake at the table on. Republicans and conservatives tend to live in rural areas. They tend to live on farms and on ranches and in the mountains. They care about the environment.
Backer's group is proposing a climate contract that, among other things, calls for using technology to remove carbon emissions from fossil fuels while a phased transition to a cleaner economy takes place.
Which side are you on now? Which side are you on?
For their part, many Democrats support the Green New Deal, which proposes faster, more extensive actions. Yet, many are open to bipartisan discussions.
We can debate on policy and make compromises. At the basis of what we believe in is that every person deserves a chance to live in like a world that isn't burning and flooding.
But ahead of November's presidential election, the COVID-19 pandemic and the economy are what Americans are most concerned about. When it comes to climate change, there is a huge gap between backers of President Donald Trump and his Democratic opponent, Joe Biden.
Just 17% of Trump supporters say that climate change is a very important issue to them this fall, but very different views among Joe Biden supporters. Almost 7 in 10, or 68%, say that climate change is a very important issue to their votes.
Yet, that partisan divide is notably smaller among younger people, the Pew Research Center's polling found.
Young Republicans really think the country should prioritize alternative energy development, things like wind and solar power. And that's a pretty big difference because older Republicans are still a bit more supportive of oil, coal, natural gas.
Climate change was only briefly discussed at the first presidential debate, but voters under 35 want to hear more.
It's an issue that deserves far more time to be discussed and far more time for our candidates to be asked those questions, because this is about our future.
Young voters want to be more responsible about things going forward, whether that's us on our campuses and, you know, just dealing with like daily lifestyle changes, but also, you know, making sure that we are talking to our legislators.
Independent voters, who make up 40% of the electorate, according to the group Independent Voting, support major structural changes, irrespective of their ages. While young Americans may disagree on the approach to climate change, they want solutions.
Most young people are very passionate and agree about the importance and impact of addressing climate change. Why is it taken for granted that the U.S. government cannot be updated and reinvented so that it addresses the problems that are facing today?
The challenge for young voters now, turning that passion into action.
Typically fewer than half of younger voters end up actually voting. And every 4 years, there's a lot of conversation, will young people vote at higher rates than they have in the past? And the most direct answer is we don't know.
Veronica Valderas Iglesias for VOA News, Washington.
For almost 2 years, a group of dedicated young women in a conservative neighborhood of Karachi have been working to beat the odds and change the culture around them. The women are doing it by cycling. VOA's Aisha Tanzim reports from Pakistan's largest city, Karachi.
Riding a bicycle sounds like a very ordinary activity in many parts of the world. Not here, and not for these girls. This is Liari, a conservative neighborhood in Pakistan's largest city, Karachi. Women here are mostly absent from public life. So when a Germany-sponsored NGO called Liari Girls Cafe helped a group of young girls learn how to ride a bicycle, locals were shocked. Initially, the resistance was strong. People would pass foul comments. Some local madrasas even sent young students to throw stones at them.
Sometimes the criticism was so harsh that we felt disturbed and mentally tortured, but we did not give up and continue our journey.
Every Sunday, these girls pick up their bikes and take them to an empty parking lot to practice. For them, it is more than a simple sport. It is a form of activism.
I belong to an area where girls are often suppressed. I did not want my daughters to go through what I went through as a child. I started cycling myself so I can bring my daughters with me.
Not a single one of these young women owns a bike. The 30 bikes they share among themselves have been mostly donated by local authorities or the German consulate in Karachi. Ultimately, these girls are hoping to change attitudes. They want cycling to become normal for females. They want to be able to do it in their daily lives, to go to school or to work. Their hopes for the future are high, but for now, this stretch of road, empty on a Sunday morning, is the only space they have to express their passion. Aisha Tanzim, VOA News, Karachi.
That's our program for today. We thank you for joining us on VOA Asia. Don't forget to follow us on Facebook at VOA Asia, also Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. We also like to thank the team that helps bring you this program, our managing editor, Diane Gao, Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, and Keith Lane. I'm Jim Stevenson. We hope you have a great day ahead. Be safe. Be well.